You're listening to Sonologue's podcast, NRI, New and Returned Indians. In each episode, we meet someone who's recently moved to India and get their perspectives on living, working, and just being here. The good, the bad, and the fun. In this episode of NRI's Equals New and Returned Indians, we talked to Rita Soni, who moved to India from the US 3 years ago. For someone who visited India infrequently while growing up, she's taken to the motherland quite well. She moved from a staunch non-profit background, her job in Delhi was with the American India Foundation, to heading corporate social responsibility at a national bank in Mumbai.
Hi, my name is Rita Soni. I worked in the nonprofit sector for about 6 years before coming here, and then before that worked for six years in the for-profit sector.
Not in India.
It's the first time I'm working in a bank, even though I'm heading up a division, which is interesting. I was born and raised in the U.S. I was born in Birmingham, Alabama, with a banjo on my knee. But
you
thankfully,
are not.
Thankfully, only 12 days. My parents were just waiting for me to be born in order to move to Texas. And then we lived there for about 9 years, which is also thankful because I do not have a southern drawl. We moved to New Jersey from there. And then I grew up in New Jersey. My formative years were there, and I went to college in Hoboken, New Jersey.
Very nice.
And then I started working for GE. I was in one of their training programs. So my first year was in North Carolina. My second year was in Wisconsin. And then I joined their corporate audit staff. So I traveled like crazy. I basically moved all of my stuff to my parents' house. Mm-hmm. And I was in different assignments every 3-4 months. So I went to all kinds of rural places that GE has plants, like Kansas and different parts of Ohio and weird parts of Southern California. But also got a chance to go to Europe as well, including Budapest, which is also a little bit odd, but cool, very cool.
So you've traveled around quite a bit. What's the longest you've ever lived anywhere?
So while I was with the corporate audit staff, I ended my tour in New York City. Mm-hmm. I'd met somebody in New York City, so I decided I wanted to stay there. So I would say the longest I've been anywhere is New York City. Unfortunately, the relationship didn't last as long as living there, but I was there for about 10 years.
All right. And when you were growing up, did your family come to India often?
We were one of those families that came not that frequently, both because it was really expensive for a middle-class, 4-person family to travel, but also because we wanted to also explore the place that we were living. We would do tons of road trips, mm-hmm. and things like that. So we would come every 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. Catch up with family, and then my parents would also sort of just take us on a vacation to explore India and see the different things here as well.
And where was your family's family?
My mom's family is all mostly in Bombay, or was mostly all in Bombay. And my dad's was pretty much all in Gujarat, other than the small amount of family that's in the U.S.
Okay, so home base was either Mumbai or Gujarat. And then
different parts of Gujarat, yeah.
Excellent. So when did you move to India, and what were you doing before that, and why did you move to India?
I moved to India in January 2006. I was working for, I shifted actually from the for-profit sector to working in the nonprofit sector. And I had started up a relationship with the American India Foundation, first as a volunteer, then as a consultant, mm-hmm. and all this in New York. And then the opportunity to come to India arose. And ever since switching into the nonprofit sector, I'd been telling myself I wanted to live abroad, but I just kept finding excuses on why it wasn't the right time. I wasn't married, and of course it's impossible to meet anybody in the developing world and things like that.
We'll come back to that in a few
minutes. Yeah. So I realized that there were no more excuses. I still hadn't met anybody, but it was just the right time. They had a position that was open, and they almost were creating a whole new space. I was the first American to go and work in the AIF office in Delhi. Mm-hmm. And I was really to be sort of the connect, the bridge between the two offices, the three offices, actually. We had one office in California, one in New York, and then Delhi.
Okay.
Officially, I was doing communications, and it was literally communications as opposed to your usual PR and media-focused communications. So it was more of really bridging these gaps, which was a really big challenge considering distance is one thing that makes makes people different. But even considering most of the people at AIF at that time in the U.S. offices, most of them were Indian born. There was still a big distinction between where you are physically and what your focus has been for your whole life, I guess. I never really came up with exactly why there were major communication gaps.
Between the office here and their compatriots and counterparts in America.
Right, right. But there were. And you know, once I actually came to India, I started to have the same kind of communication gaps or difficulties. So
really?
I think, you know, maybe part of the problem is as Indians, mm-hmm. It's a theory. We kind of rely on the face-to-face communication and the relationships that you build, you know, like in the Delhi office when you're sitting around and having your khana, you're sharing each other's food and you're getting to know each other in a different way than you do over email. So one of the things I definitely requested that we do a little bit more of was have more conference calls and get people just talking, mm-hmm. talking without the formality of email and the impersonality of email. And that seemed to help a little bit, but still there was just, it was a pretty tough nut to crack.
And so what happened and how come you're not working with them anymore?
Nothing happened per se. I wasn't in the communications field to start with. It was more, this was a great opportunity to come here and live. I had made a commitment of 2 years to come and work with AIF in India, and I was coming to the end of my 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I knew that while I had learned so much, I mean, I was able to travel to every corner of India. It was amazing. And see really what truly development is about. And I would say, you know, the AIF is doing and a phenomenal job in the development sector. And I would say I probably met some of the best NGOs across India doing fabulous work. I knew that communications wasn't where I wanted to be. I was lucky enough, I got a chance to work a little bit in programmatic areas as well, more in the livelihood space. But I knew there was more to it, more things that I wanted to do. And the thing was that living in India, I started to see there's really a lot of people that are doing a lot of different, interesting things. So I just simply started to explore, really just explore.
Had you considered moving back? Were you thinking that you would stay?
I did think about it. But what struck me was that probably the majority of jobs working in international development in New York, which is where I would have wanted to go, but generally in the U.S., would have been in the fundraising area. That's really not something I want to do or wanted to do.
Months after submitting her resume to a bank that was looking at giving back in the social sector, she was called to an interview and met with the president of the bank.
I was literally blown away. I had no idea that a corporate in India was seriously looking at how it is that they can have an impact on poverty. He basically said exactly what I needed to hear. Governments have tried and they've made a dent, but pretty much just a small dent. Nonprofits have come in, also tried, and small dents have been made in the issue of poverty. Now it's the turn of corporates. And whether we're doing it in partnership with NGOs, we're doing it in partnership with governments, or we're doing it on our own, now it's the turn of corporates. And it was exactly what I needed to hear. And the rest is history. I ended up here.
Yeah. So when was that?
So I moved to India in January 2006. I worked with AIF for 2 years, and mm-hmm. then I came to Bombay in January 2008.
Wow. And how has it been for you?
It's been great. I've learned a lot. Like I said, AIF was an amazing experience. I have a completely different outlook on what the issues are in India and how embedded and how these things are. They're complex in a way that business could never be. When I used to look at the way a nonprofit was being run compared to my experience in the for-profit sector, I would say, gosh, you know, if these guys could just mm-hmm. run the way my GE days were, mm-hmm. they could have solved all these problems by now. And some of those operational things are still there. But in terms of solving the problems, I realize it's going to take a lot more and it's going to take a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. What about personally? I mean, this is professionally, it sounds like it makes a lot of sense for you to be here and it's fulfilling.
Yeah.
What about in your personal life?
Personal life. So I frankly thought I was going to come to India and be celibate for 2 years. And actually, I had made a sort of side deal with our CFO at AIF saying that, okay, let's see how the first year goes. And if I want to come back, I can. But I realized it's really, India is changing so much. I've met some incredible people. I've dated and I've met some really nice guys. It's completely not what I expected. I expected to miss my family, miss my friends, which I do, mm-hmm. but communications is so easy. I had full time, I mean, I had unlimited internet access at home. Of course, I had it at work. With AIF, because our offices were in New York and California, I had an IP phone that was actually a New York phone number. Mm-hmm. So I was able to give that to my friends mm-hmm. and my family. And then in terms of other things that I thought I would miss, everything seemed adjustable, you know? Food was one big thing.
What did you miss?
Well, I still miss Mexican food like crazy.
God, yeah.
But what I thought was, you know, I grew up eating a variety of food mm-hmm. literally every day. Mm-hmm. And I can do that here.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize I would be able to do that. So, yeah, I think everything has been adjustable, and then the side benefits have been awesome.
Such as?
I would say meeting the kind of people that I've met, seeing, and it's professional, but I guess I take it personally, seeing the kinds of creativity and innovation that people are doing across India on trying to battle things like poverty and other issues, whether it's through education or health, various livelihoods issues. The kind of innovation that I've seen and the kind of gumption, it really boggles my mind. I mean, I'm really excited that Google Foundation is doing this thing with innovation and ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, if I could just fill their database with the things I've already seen, mm-hmm. and if they could fund the things I've already seen to scale them up, to redesign them so that they can be scaled up and then, you know, reach more people, to me, that's even better.
Mm-hmm.
Then, because the ideas are here. There's so many of them. It's just a matter of
translating them into action.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And some of them are action already, or a lot of them are action already. But it's just more they're at a smaller scale. They haven't met the right people to fund them to grow. Or it's, you know, something that's actually mm-hmm. locally specific. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot. There's a lot of really neat ideas that are out there.
So what are some of the good things about being here besides that? Like, what are you most happy about here?
Honestly, it's the professional side.
That is so odd, because most people have such a hard time with the professional side.
The professional side is hard, but I guess for me, professional is personal, and I really want to make a difference. I want to go to sleep every night thinking, I've either made a difference in somebody's life, or I'm on a path to make a difference in a lot of people's life.
But you could do this elsewhere.
I don't know that I could do it from New York or from the U.S. I think I could do it in terms of making a difference in the lives of New Yorkers or mm-hmm. Americans. But the scale and the level of distress that's here, it's just overwhelming. So I don't know.
So do you feel like you're more needed here? Like your contribution would just go a little further here?
I think there are a ton of smart minds that are needed here, absolutely. That ethos and that philosophy sort of already exists in America.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people that are working towards a lot of good there.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, I think, you know, with what happened with Katrina, poverty yeah. in the U.S. is hard to find. But when you find it, it's horrible. It's racist, and most people are blind to it. You know, elected officials like Giuliani want to hide it. But at the end of the day, it's there. But it's just not even at the scale that it is here and the things that need to be solved here. So, I don't know. It's weird that I can say this. I mean, I know I'm kind of a weird nut that I'm, like, all focused on on my profession, but I really do believe that's what I want to do. It's personal as well as professional. It's where my passions lie.
Well, excellent that you can tap into that and make it work for you.
And get paid.
And get paid. Has your personal life taken a beating?
I think the personal life has had its ups and downs. I've definitely missed having people around me that know me really well.
But you moved so much in the States, though. Wasn't it similar?
Well, I was in New York for a pretty good period of time, and New York is a funny place. I think most people look at New York as very transient, but it's not for the sort of hardcore New Yorkers.
Uh-huh.
I think in the 10 years I was there, I had two friends move away, one moved back.
Okay.
So, yeah, I had a really great core group of friends.
Yeah, and they become your family.
And they become your family.
Yeah.
The other thing about New York and my life there was I didn't have any language issues. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any safety issues. I didn't have any transportation issues. I knew how to get from point A to point B, no problem. And if I was going to a new part of New York that I hadn't been to, the subway map was great.
Okay, but besides language and safety, once you've been here long enough, at least your transportation issues and knowing where to go will fix themselves, right?
I don't know. I mean, first of all, New York has an amazing subway system that I don't think can be replicated anywhere. Or maybe it can, but it hasn't been. So that's always going to exist. But even language and safety, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, let's talk about those. Those are big ones.
Yeah. I mean, I've been here now almost 3 years.
Do you speak Gujarati? Do you speak Hindi?
I don't speak either very well.
Mm-hmm.
My Gujarati, understanding of Gujarati is probably better than my understanding of Hindi, but both are pretty mediocre in terms of speaking. And I mean, my Hindi is strong enough to get by in terms of what I need to tell a taxi driver or an auto guy or my maid. But other than that, like, it's teak.
Okay.
But so that's an issue, and I know that I need to work on that and sort of get through that. But I think having lived in Delhi for the first 2 years, safety was a really, really big issue.
As a woman or just being by yourself in Delhi?
That's an interesting question. I always thought of it just as a woman, but it's true, being by yourself when you don't really have any kind of infrastructure to base anything on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by the time I left 2 years later, I had a ton of friends, people who had cars, taxi stands that I knew where to call, and all of those things. But it's true, when I first moved there, I remember the first taxi ride that I took by myself out of town, and the only people I knew were my landlord and his wife, and then my colleagues, who I really didn't know so well. And I was taking a half day taxi to Gurgaon.
Okay.
And my landlord came downstairs and had a word with the taxi driver. He's like, "She's very new. Take care of her," and all this stuff in Hindi. And then the taxi driver was Punjabi. So my landlord was Punjabi, so they started talking to each other in Punjabi, and it was very cute, and it was really sweet. And I think if anything like that had ever happened to me in the U.S., I would have been probably angry. Like, somebody thinks I can't take care of myself. But in this case, it was comforting, and it was really nice. So, yeah.
Do you find Bombay more accessible, more safe?
Bombay's definitely safer. I can feel it just walking home at night from the office, you can definitely feel it. Even just the attitude of the everyday man that's on the street, they're not staring at you just because you have a sleeveless shirt on.
Yeah.
Or basically, they're not just staring at you because you happen to be a woman, which is what happens in Delhi.
Yeah.
There's still curiosity and stares because there's still, even in Bombay, not a lot of women walking home from work with the laptop strapped to one shoulder and a gym bag on the other shoulder. There's not a lot of that, so it is a curiosity. And people still ask, "Oh, you live by yourself? Where's your family? Where's your husband?" All those things. So it's still a curiosity, but it's not as much. And when they stare, it's more, really, they're just curious. They're like, what is this story? What's this person's story? So,
it's less intrusive.
Yeah, it's definitely less intrusive. Even though I do live in a Guju society and stuff, and you know, I'll run into somebody in the elevator and they're like, oh, you're on the sixth floor, right?
So they know who you are.
You know. It's true. I guess most people in Bombay don't have any time, but sometimes the aunties have a little too much time. Yeah, my friend has just moved to an apartment near Siddhivinayak Temple. And we were on the roof enjoying the sunset and checking out all of his views of the temple and the Bandra Worli Sea Link and all kinds of things. It was really cool because it's on the, well, he's on the ninth floor. His roof is obviously the 10th floor. And yeah, we were hanging out on the roof, and then one of his aunties, one of the downstairs aunties, came up.
An auntie's not somebody who's related, just...
Oh, right. Just his neighbors. This woman came up, and she was asking how his roommate search is going. And she very coyly said, well, how about asking this girl to stay with you in Hindi? And he's like, you know, both of us are sort of big smiles and thinking, oh, that's not going to happen. And then eventually another auntie came upstairs, you know, the evening walk kind of thing. And yeah, the other auntie was having a chat with him about something else, and he kind of skipped over his words. And he's like, oh, getting nervous around her, huh? It's really funny. It's really funny.
It's hilarious. And so you mentioned missing Mexican food. What else do you miss?
The transportation thing sort of is a little deeper. Just that sense of knowing where you're going and how you need to go there. It does, but even in Delhi, I was there for 2 years and I got very comfortable with certain places that I was going, there was still some hesitation. And even now, I mean, I have a great map. The first thing I bought in Delhi was the Eicher map. The first thing I bought in Bombay was the Eicher map, and I love it because it gives you...
I should buy one of them.
Incredible amount of detail. It's awesome. But somehow it doesn't work as well in Bombay as it did in Delhi.
Hmm.
I mean, it's correct. I believe it's accurate. But these taxi guys, they sort of have their own ways of going places, and things just don't look the same. And I don't know why. It just is very confusing.
So you don't
confusing.
Have that comfort level yet?
Definitely not. Definitely.
Do you want to stay here? What are your plans?
Oh, I don't know what my plans are. I think the biggest thing is as long as I feel like I'm constantly learning, I'm constantly having an impact, and I'm also happy outside of work. And right now, I completely am. I love exploring Bombay. Bombay reminds me so much of New York.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten a little bit lazy, and I don't go to Bandra and outside of town very much. So I think that's got to change. And I'm slowly developing a circle of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, kind of interesting, a very different circle from my Delhi crowd. Delhi, same as here, I didn't really hang out with expats very much. But most of the people were either doing nonprofit stuff or doing sort of random business stuff.
Okay.
Like filmmakers and artists.
Mm-hmm.
And a very good friend of mine is a curator. Whereas here, a lot of the people I'm meeting are more professional. They're in the banking industry, or they're in the nonprofit industry, or they're in various sectors all throughout. And so it's just a totally different crowd. And then also at work, I have kind of fewer peers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the first time I'm in such a senior management position. So there's fewer peers in that sense.
Class hierarchy sort of thing happening?
Yeah, I mean... I think I break those class hierarchies pretty frequently, but it's hard to do that constantly.
That's got to be hard for both the senior management to watch as well as your juniors, because they probably don't know what to do with you.
Maybe. I don't know. I know that it's... I don't like hierarchies, and I do find that when I ask people from my team to do something... they hesitate and they think, oh, well, shouldn't you be sending that email or shouldn't you be making that phone call? How can I call so-and-so? How can I call so-and-so? And I have to push it because I believe if I'm made to do all those things, nothing's ever going to get done. But second of all, there's absolutely no reason that an associate can't pick up the phone and talk to a president. I don't see absolutely any reason.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Thanks.
And what advice, finally, would you give somebody else like you who's moving here?
I think I think the most important thing is to quit reminding yourself that you've made this big leap and you're doing such a huge thing. I think it's about coming and being yourself while adjusting to certain things. The things you want to adjust to, you should adjust to, and the things that are important to you, you should keep in mind. And other things you should just accept that you're not going to change. For example, I don't like Colgate toothpaste. I'm going to get my Crest toothpaste from the U.S. I mean, it's such a dumb thing.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a dumb little thing, but it's what I like, and it's okay. It's okay.
Sure.
So, I don't know. I guess that's the best advice. And I think, I don't know, I'm older than most of the people I know that have taken this leap. Maybe that's why I'm able to sit back and say, I don't know what my plan is. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas maybe if you're younger, you feel like there's a particular line that you're supposed to be following, and certain things that you need to accomplish by a certain age. But right now, I feel like the best advice to anybody coming to India particularly, because it's so hard to predict what's going to go in which direction. I really think it's just about a place that you just need to relax and just take it all in and enjoy it. Make the best of it. I mean, I know, for example, I haven't been making the best of it in its entirety. I haven't traveled for fun, for example, as much as I'd like to. But I'm still here, so let's see. Hopefully those things can happen.
Yeah, I hope so. We'll plan a trip.
Yes, let's plan a trip.
All right. So thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And good luck.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Sonalog's podcast, NRI, New and Returned Indians, where everyone's a Desi. Keep us bookmarked for future episodes. And if you have questions you want addressed by someone who's just moved here, drop us a mail at info@sonalog.com. That's info, I-N-F-O, @sonalog, S-O-N-O-L-O-G-U-E.com.